Hello, everyone. This is the Secretary of State. I've just been rousted from my sleep.
Washington, D.C. In the war game, it is October 2026, 2:30 a.m. Just a few hours earlier, the U.S. Secretary of State had gone to bed. He is abruptly woken by a call from a close aide, who tells him that a new crisis is unfolding in Europe. Lithuania, a NATO ally, suspects Russian special forces have infiltrated its territory and fears a larger-scale attack. In the war game, he is played by Jeff Ratke, a former U.S. diplomat and NATO official. Since he's American, you are hearing his original voice, whereas the German-speaking participants have been dubbed by fellow journalists.
I just want to give you my reactions, keeping in mind that it's very early here in Washington.
On the other side of the Atlantic, leaders in Berlin, Paris, and Warsaw have long been in meetings with their ministers. Europe is 6 hours ahead of the U.S. East Coast. In Washington, inquiries are pouring in. Where do the Americans stand? How will NATO respond? Still sounding slightly groggy, the Secretary of State sends a message to America's allies.
There is an allegation that there might be Russian troops in Lithuania, and that is something that is quite serious if it turns out to be true. I look forward to talking to you all within the NATO alliance, which the United States remains a firm supporter of.
The United States is the most important country in NATO, the only power that could truly defend Europe in a worst-case scenario. If Russian troops were to appear somewhere in Eastern Europe, the entire continent would first look to Washington. Because NATO's core promise is this: an attack on one is an attack on all. In the last episode, Team Russia laid out its plan: an attack on Lithuania. Publicly, however, the Kremlin presents it as a humanitarian operation.
The president wishes for us to establish a humanitarian corridor. Vilnius is only 30 kilometers away.
To make one thing clear, the so-called humanitarian emergency in Kaliningrad that the Russian leadership is talking about is completely fabricated. The real aim is to create a political pretext for an invasion. The Kremlin used similar humanitarian justifications for its actions in the Donbas region of eastern Ukraine, without any factual basis. The same pretext is now being used to send Russian troops into Lithuania. If Russia follows through on its plans, one crucial question immediately arises. Is Washington prepared to stand alongside the Europeans? But there's another question too. Has Germany understood Moscow's real intentions? Do the Chancellor, his ministers and advisors grasp how close this crisis is to spiraling out of control? In episode 1, they assessed the situation. Now they have to make decisions. And they won't be making them alone, but together with their allies. The Russians are moving fast. The question is whether the West can keep up. My name is Carolina Drüten. I am the international security correspondent at the German media outlet Welt. This is Ernstfall. What if Russia attacks NATO? Inside a German war game. Episode 2. Invasion. The US Secretary of State had been cautious, but he reaffirmed America's commitment to NATO. The president sends a very different signal shortly afterward. He has no interest in another conflict in Europe after, as he sees it, having just ended the war in Ukraine. When reporters asking about the situation in Lithuania, he says he believes Vladimir Putin wants peace. The American response is divided. And in Europe, nobody knows which position will ultimately prevail.
To be honest, in my view, the American position does not really change the situation.
This was our war game chancellor. He is sitting in a room at Helmut Schmidt University of the German Armed Forces in Hamburg, where a simulation is taking place. Around the table with him are former senior officials, politicians, and experts. The blue team. Together, they are simulating a crisis meeting of the German government. For decades, Europe assumed that in the end, the United States would stand by NATO militarily. Under Donald Trump, that assumption no longer feels guaranteed. And yet, the blue team is still hoping that Washington will ultimately step in once again. But with the American position unclear, the German government begins preparing its own response.
I believe we've long passed the point of this wasn't us, or we didn't do that, or of merely suspecting that Russia is launching a hybrid attack against us. Otherwise, we'll never break out of this reactive mode. The next thing that will happen is that we'll have drone sightings over airports again, air traffic will be severely disrupted, and even then, we'll just be reacting once more. What I'd like to see is for everyone around this table to think about how we can take the initiative in our respective areas and show the other side that we are capable of acting. In terms of deterrence, I believe that is exactly what we need to do. And I think that is what people in Germany and our allies expect from us.
Deterrence means to dissuade Russia from taking the next step. The basic idea is that the price of an attack would be so high that the other side backs away from it.
If we are honest with ourselves, we have to ask whether we spent too long merely reacting. And that is why I also disagree with the idea that we have been living in a period of deep peace for all these years. We created an illusion of living in peace.
It quickly becomes clear that the Bundeswehr is expected to project strength. The defense minister now takes the floor.
I would like to instruct the Inspector General of the Armed Forces to examine how we can conduct exercises at a lower level in the Baltics, with our brigade, but also with our allies. The aim is to show that, as part of the normal operations, we are capable of carrying out such exercises and demonstrating our readiness to defend.
The Inspector General is Germany's highest-ranking soldier and the federal government's senior military advisor. The defense minister wants to send a signal that the German brigade in Lithuania is ready. In reality, however, it is still being built up and is not expected to reach full operational capability before the end of 2027. That is why the defense minister turns to the inspector general for an assessment.
We could launch a campaign centered around increased military exercises in Lithuania. We've done that before. In practical terms, that means sending troops there. Looking at the timeline, it's October now, I would estimate we could do it within the next 4 weeks.
The blue team decides to move ahead with the measure. There's one important rule in the war game. In each round, the teams can debate as much as they want. But in the end, they must settle on three concrete decisions. Because in real life, too, resources are limited, and governments cannot implement every measure at once. The blue team chooses to send a clear signal: military exercises in Lithuania. In practice, that would mean German soldiers traveling to Lithuania in the coming weeks, by ship and overland through Poland, to take part in military drills there. The Navy is also beginning to prepare for the crisis.
Increased maritime presence in the Baltic Sea and the Black Sea for reconnaissance and air defense.
Soon, warships begin leaving German ports. Everything seaworthy is heading for the Baltic Sea, including Sachsen-class frigates. Germany has three of these great giants, as they are called. Using their radar systems, they can monitor the airspace and intercept hostile aircraft, missiles, and drones. Other NATO countries are also sending ships into the Baltic and Black Seas. The blue team also instructs Germany's intelligence service to intensify surveillance and reconnaissance. Russia is no longer supposed to make a single move unnoticed. Brussels. At NATO headquarters, operations are running around the clock. The Secretary General is in constant contact with allied capitals. In the war game, the role is played by Oana Lungescu, a true NATO insider. For many years, she served as the alliance's chief spokesperson and closely advised two secretaries general. She is now on the phone with the chancellor in Berlin.
to increase our vigilance. I will propose that we step up our surveillance flights with our AWACS planes in Geilenkirchen.
She explains what NATO can do to get a better picture of Russian troop movements.
However, I have to be frank, we have some gaps. Only two of our three planes are currently operational. As you know, they're over 40 years old, so they are in need of some upgrades.
In the war game, Poland and Lithuania begin reinforcing their troops at a critical point, the Suwalki Gap. You can think of it as a bottleneck. When you look at the map, Poland lies to the south, Lithuania to the north, the Russian exclave of Kaliningrad to the west, and Russia's ally Belarus to the east. The border between Poland and Lithuania is only about 65 kilometers long, barely more than a short drive on the highway. For NATO, this narrow strip of land is the only ground connection to its Baltic member states further north. If Russia were to cut off the gap militarily, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania would be isolated from the rest of the alliance. That is why this area is considered one of the most dangerous strategic flashpoints in Europe. In the war game, the Russian team is preparing to target it. But that is not their only option.
Mr. Military Chief, you already outlined a few options. Let's briefly go through them.
In my assessment, there are two possible options.
In the red team, the military chief is the architect of the invasion plans.
One option, purely from a geographical perspective, would be a corridor running along the railway line and the main transport routes crossing Lithuania from east to west.
A quick reminder. In the war game, it is October 2026. Earlier in the scenario, a Russian train made an unscheduled stop just beyond the Lithuanian border. These trains do in fact travel daily between Russia and Kaliningrad, passing through Belarus and Lithuania along the way. In Lithuania, passengers are strictly forbidden from boarding or leaving the trains, which makes what happens in our scenario all the more alarming. Armed men escape from the train. Lithuanian authorities suspect that they are Russian special forces. And they are right.
Those 18 men, they're our own people, of course.
The railway line from which the men escaped is strategically important. It forms the backbone of the first military option the Russians are discussing. An advance along the tracks, straight through Lithuania, from the Belarusian border to Kaliningrad. The roads in that area are well developed, allowing military vehicles to move forward quickly.
The major downside from a military perspective is the significant risk of escalation.
Lithuania's main artery could come under Russian control. Vilnius, the capital, would lie within reach of Russian troops.
The second major issue is that if we bypass Vilnius to the south, we would very likely encounter elements of the German brigade.
German soldiers would then be facing Kremlin troops directly. But the Russians want to avoid a major escalation. Their goal is to create facts on the ground without triggering NATO's collective defense clause, Article 5. That is why the military chief proposes a second option. This one centers on the Suwalki Gap.
We can establish fire control over the Suwalki Gap without having to send military personnel directly into Lithuania. With forces currently at my disposal, we could use multiple rocket launchers, artillery, mines, and based on what we learned in the war in Ukraine, drones, to prevent NATO forces from moving through the Suwalki Gap without physically establishing defensive positions inside Lithuania.
Russia's foreign minister now joins the discussion.
I have a question on that. The two options you outlined, what would they mean for the German brigade?
The brigade is not yet at full combat strength. It lacks sufficient air and missile defense capabilities. And according to our intelligence assessments, it also doesn't have enough ammunition to sustain prolonged resistance.
In other words, the Russians do not believe the German brigade can stop them. While Moscow is drawing up attack plans, countless lines of communication are converging in Berlin. Externally, Germany wants to project readiness and resolve. Internally, however, another question is just as critical. How does the German state remain functional in a crisis like this?
Domestically, we need to make measures to clarify what our reserves can actually do, where we may need to protect critical infrastructure, and how our reservists can support the Interior Ministry of potential operations.
That was the defense minister. He is concerned that existing personnel and emergency structures could quickly reach their limits. Reservists could help ease the burden. The finance minister points to the economic risks involved.
I understand what the defense minister said about mobilizing reservists. And ultimately, he's the one who has to make the call. But the longer reservists are away from their regular jobs, the more it hurts the country's economic output. So, yes, you do what you have to do, but the longer this lasts, the more those workers are missing elsewhere.
The finance minister has raised a very important point. Many of our reservists have dual roles. They also serve in the fire brigade, in civil protection, or work in emergency services. That makes it harder to release them from their civilian duties. I suggest that the National Security Council address this issue and that preparations are made early on, together with the Chambers of Commerce, to identify which reservists can be called up so that we don't mobilize the wrong people or wait too long.
Two different approaches are at odds here. From a defense perspective, the state needs additional personnel. But pulling up people into reserve service can create shortages elsewhere. That means decisions about which reservists to call up have to be planned very carefully. And in many areas, Berlin cannot act alone.
I also want to point out the limits of what we can actually do at the federal level. All of this requires coordination with the federal states. Yes, if the legal conditions are met, then we are talking about civil protection measures. And in that case, the federal government can issue orders. But at this point, we do not have full authority over the states. And that is a problem because it requires coordination.
The Interior Minister is raising an important point here. Germany is a federal state, shaped by a post-war system designed to prevent too much power from being concentrated in one central government. Many responsibilities, including policing and large parts of critical infrastructure, lie within the 16 federal states, not Berlin. But in a fast-moving crisis like this, the system can also slow decision-making.
From our perspective, it's essential that government functions remain operational at all levels of the state during this crisis.
This is Christoph Unger. For many years, he headed Germany's Federal Office of Civil Protection and Disaster Assistance, the agency responsible for preparing the country for crises, disasters, and wartime emergencies. In the war game, he is stepping back into his former role.
We have instruments available, and I'd advise using them. For example, the Civil Emergency Planning System.
Germany's civil emergency planning system is essentially an internal switch into crisis mode. Every authority, from the federal government down to small local administrations, has predefined emergency procedures that can then be activated. Crisis staffs are assembled, on-call personnel alerted, warning systems activated, and information chains put in motion. The federal government can also begin issuing instructions to the states. In the war game, the government takes two additional decisions. One is to convene the National Security Council. In this format, not only ministers, but also representatives of the federal states and private companies can be brought in. Germany is not yet entering a formal state of emergency, but it is shifting into crisis mode. And it wants the public to see that.
As a confidence-building measure, I would like to put one final point on the table. Increasing the visible presence of state institutions in public spaces.
Agreed.
Soldiers, police officers, emergency responders, people serving in these organizations should be encouraged to wear their uniforms in public.
The story quickly becomes headline news on evening television. And at this point, another reminder. All developments in our war game are fictional. The news broadcasts you're about to hear were generated with artificial intelligence.
Across Germany, the signs of crisis are becoming visible.
Soldiers, police officers, and emergency personnel are now appearing publicly in uniform as the government moves to reassure the population and demonstrate state readiness. Earlier today, Germany activated its civil emergency planning system for the first time in history. Crisis staffs and emergency coordination centres across the country are now operating at heightened readiness.
The Red Team also learns of the measures taken by the Germans and remains unimpressed.
They expect nothing of what we will do.
Your respect for the Germans used to be greater, Mr. President.
Yes, back then. That's water under the bridge.
They're so small-minded. It's unbelievable.
The Russians have one major advantage here. They already know that they have decided to invade Lithuania. The Blue Team, by contrast, is reacting to what it can see. Hybrid attacks, troop movements, warnings coming out of Vilnius. From the Germans' perspective, the measures they are taking are necessary in an uncertain situation. From the Russian perspective, however, the German response looks hesitant and slow. This is how the Russian foreign minister describes it.
It's often been the same in the past. Germany never expected what we were capable of doing offensively. They were always caught off guard, and to this day, they haven't learned anything. I mean, NATO is now effectively on the brink of a major war, and the German response is petty, half-hearted. It's unbelievable.
The Russian military chief is now thinking aloud about Germany's decision to send additional ships for air defense into the Baltic Sea and reinforce its troops in Lithuania.
The key question is, how quickly can this actually happen? I believe it would probably take 2 or 3 days to carry out this entire operation.
The most dangerous and relevant development for us here is the increased presence along the Suwalki corridor by Polish and Lithuanian troops.
For us, the conclusion is once again that we would need to move quickly. As long as we can establish this corridor within 72 hours, we can prevent a rapid NATO response. Frankly, I cannot imagine a truly fast reaction within the first 48 hours.
And that is exactly what Russia does. The following night, at 3 o'clock in the morning, Russian troops cross into Lithuania from Belarus. Moscow calls them peacekeeping forces, whose sole purpose is to protect a humanitarian convoy heading to Kaliningrad. In reality, however, a heavily armed mechanized force is rolling across the border. Russia plans the operation like a pincer movement. Troops push westward from Belarus while units from Kaliningrad move eastward. Within 24 hours, they link up in a strategically important city.
The military key to the Baltics is the city of Mariupole. Critical transport routes converge there, and it is effectively the only major land route through which NATO reinforcements and supplies could move. One of Russia's main objectives would therefore be to seize the city as quickly as possible.
Lithuanians had begun digging anti-tank trenches and laying mines. But the country is small. It has a population of just 3 million people and no fighter jets of its own. From the war in Ukraine, the Russians know very well how to clear minefields. They use artillery and drones to blast through defensive lines and push through the gaps. Without outside support, Lithuania cannot hold back an assault of this scale and speed. Russian troops now control the only land connection between the Baltics and the rest of NATO territory. Around the corridor, they establish a danger zone using mines, rocket launchers, drones, and air defense systems, designed to prevent anyone from pushing them back out of the territory they have seized. The Kremlin's men stand on Lithuanian soil. Russia has invaded a NATO country without formally declaring war. A note at this point. This does not, of course, mean that Lithuania would simply stand by and watch. In our reporting from Lithuania, military officials told us that they closely monitor Russian and Belarusian troop movements and that they would respond to suspicious activity with deployments of their own. However, according to analysts, Lithuania cannot defend itself against Russia alone. The country's security ultimately hinges on whether NATO allies are willing and able to come to its defense, and how quickly they do so. Back to the war game. Inside the blue team, the Inspector General of the Bundeswehr reports on the latest developments.
At 3 a.m. local time this morning, around 12,000 Russian troops crossed the Belarusian border, headed towards Kaliningrad. This is a clear violation of alliance territory involving a significant number of troops.
This is now a state of war that needs to be monitored 24/7.
This was the intelligence chief. Then the defense minister speaks.
As far as the Slovakia corridor is concerned, the very existence of the three Baltic states is at risk. 5.6 million people. If that corridor were to be sealed off and done so militarily without international assistance, we would have to consider this an armed blockade aimed at cutting off all the Baltic states. That means we would, in any case, have to move beyond consultations and put the collective defense clause on the table.
The defense minister is referring to NATO's collective defense clause, Article 5. Under it, an attack on one NATO member is considered an attack on all. If Article 5 is invoked, an enormous military machinery is set into motion. But that requires agreement from all member states, including the United States, whose position in the war game is still unclear. One step below Article 5 is Article 4. Under that provision, a member state can request consultations with its allies if it believes its territorial integrity or security is under threat. In the war game, Lithuania has already done so. Inside the blue team, one question is now moving to the center of discussion. A question every government hopes it never has to answer. The Chancellor says it out loud.
Let me state this very clearly. If only one German soldier is killed in combat by Russian forces, then for me, that is a state of defense.
In Germany, a state of defense is a formal legal status. It means the country considers itself under attack, and it triggers far-reaching political and military powers. For the government spokesperson, the time has come for the Chancellor to address the nation.
Under these circumstances, I believe that you, Mr. Chancellor, should definitely deliver a televised address this evening. The aim, of course, is to build trust among the public on the one hand, and on the other, to clearly state that although the situation is very serious, we are well prepared.
Absolutely.
Hanging over all of this is the question that was raised at the very beginning. Will the United States stand alongside Europe? Because without America, NATO would struggle to defend the Baltics. Germany's foreign minister now urges the Chancellor to clarify where everyone stands.
That is why I must urgently insist. This now has to be handled at the very top level. You need to speak with Trump directly.
But before the Germans get the chance to do that, Moscow exploits this moment of uncertainty. The Russian president picks up the phone himself and calls the U.S. State Department.
Hey, Mr. Secretary. I decided to call myself because of the gravity of the situation.
Next, the Americans will have to decide where they stand. The Chancellor addresses the nation. The first cracks begin to appear inside Germany's governing coalition. And inside the Kremlin, attack plan against Germany is suddenly on the table. This was Ernstfall. What if Russia attacks NATO? Inside a German war game. The series consists of 5 episodes, published weekly. Episode 3 will be out on 8th of July. If you have any questions or remarks, write us an email to wargame@welt.de. That's wargame@welt.de. Script and storytelling, Carolina Drüten and Antonia Beckermann. Production and sound design, Marvin Schwarz. Project leads, Antonia Beckermann, Carolina Drüten and Caroline Turzer. Research support, Jan Rosenkranz. academic guidance, Josef Werbowski and Philipp Jan Schäfer from the German Wargaming Center at Helmut Schmidt University, the Bundeswehr University in Hamburg. Cover design, Dominik Schmidt. Our special thanks go to the participants of the wargame: David McAllister, Jörg Asmussen, Gerhard Konrad, Alexander Gabujew, Franz Stefan Gadi, Christiane Hoffmann, Roderich Kiesewetter, Bad Wome Kott, Arndt Freitag von Loringhofen, Oana Lungescu, Irene Mihalic, Jeff Radke, Michael Roth, Peter Tauber, Christoph Unger and Eberhard Zorn.
We're grateful to the fellow journalists who lent their voices to the English language version of our German participants' quotes: Daniel Dillenboehmer, Stephanie Bolson, Francis Durnley, Henry Donovan, Jacob Eckstein, Philip Fritz, Eric Kirschbaum, Chris Lundy, Nicholas Potter, James Rothwell, and Konstantin Schreiber.
We would also like to thank the Helmut Schmidt University in Hamburg for providing the venue, as well as Alan Edwards, Marlene Badun, Tobias Graboff, Till Henniges, Karl Hufnagel, Elias Jakob, Thorsten Kodalle, Nico Lange and Wim Ort for their support on site. And Nana Brink, Kai Brinkmann and Nils Lange for their valuable contributions to the conceptual discussions.